Probing space and time. Probing for the truth. What is this phenomenon? What are they? From where or whence do they come? What is their purpose? Why is it happening? Why do they both reveal and lurk in the shadows simultaneously? This is the probe.
Lives may be in danger. You've seen things that weren't to be seen. I can provide you with information.
Okay, we are on. That's just kind of a sample of what's coming up in the next 50, 55 minutes, including the old Thurman routine, which, the boys are back in town. This is the fourth installment of The Probe.
The UFO amateur
investigatory program dealing with what may or may not be out there. Right now, we are going to talk about, in the first segment, X-Files. And this is Robert Selby, Mark O'Connor sitting next to him. I'm Edward O'Reilly. Go ahead, Bobby.
And the show is The Probe.
The Probe.
We did have a segment on the X-Files, I don't know, was it the last show or the show before?
Yeah, the last episode.
Last episode, and we spoke about Duane Barry, and we were going to talk about Ascension. Well, let me...
Because it's kind of a two-part episode, isn't it? And Ascension.
Yeah, Duane Barry is a former FBI agent that kind of goes nuts, and in Duane Barry, the episode itself, we see him in a mental institution, and he's really anxious because he feels that he's been abducted many times, and it's time for another abduction to come. So he escapes from the mental institution, and he takes his psychiatrist with him. And they end up in a travel agency because he actually forgot where he was supposed to go and be abducted. But it ends up being a hostage situation. So the FBI is called in, and then they call Mulder because he has experience with extraterrestrials. And he goes into the travel agency disguised as a paramedic. He's supposed to be really diffusing everything, but he kind of gets involved in Duane Barry's story about having been abducted many times. And he starts asking him, what did he see? Because Mulder's, at this point, this is the second season of The X-Files, is still looking for his sister, Samantha, whom he thinks has been abducted. Mulder manages to get Duane Barry to let the hostages go, but they have snipers outside, and so Duane Barry ends up getting shot. In the meantime, Scully does some research. Duane Barry had been shot in the head while he was a FBI agent, and that kind of changed his brain into being a compulsive liar.
An entrance requirement for all FBI agents nowadays. But.
Yeah, Mr. Colmy might think... otherwise. But anyway, Scully had done this research, and Duane Barry gets shot. And so they take him to the hospital and they kind of fix him up. But they find an implant in his belly.
One of the most common things in UFO phenomena, right? The implant. Mm-hmm. So here we are with the next X-Files episode that takes that singular element and really runs with it.
Someone did their UFO research when they conceived the series and ran with it, because a lot of it's based on, you know, what we're going to be talking about later, the Betty and Barney Hill case, other cases, you know, the Allagash, Roswell. I mean, there's it's a fictional take on it, but there's stuff there that's been out, excuse the expression, out there for many years, and they incorporate that.
Including the cigarette smoking man. Yeah. Now, we see the cigarette smoking man, who is this mysterious figure. He's not a member of the FBI, but he gets to sit in on meetings and everything, and no one is supposed to ask who he is.
Or even to butt out.
or even to...
Well, that's...
Okay, mic number three just gets a 5-minute timeout for that one.
Well, anyway, I might as well...
This is a corn-free show.
I might as well go into to the next episode, which is called Ascension. Now, Ascension begins with a message on Mulder's answering machine. It's Scully wants to know, what the hell is this thing? She has the implant, and I think she goes shopping, and she puts it by the scanner.
Oh, that was a great scene.
And all these numbers just start coming up, and she wants to know.
She breaks the cash register.
She breaks the cash register and runs. And
because she's a mature FBI agent, it's like, oops, I didn't do that.
Did I do that? Well, that's another TV show, I guess. Well, anyway, she calls up Mulder and leaves him. He's not there, and leaves a message on his machine, wondering what the implant is. And in the meantime, we hear breaking glass, and someone is breaking into her apartment. And she says, "Mulder, I need help. Mulder, I need help." It's actually Duane Barry, you know. He somehow tracked her down. His big theory is he wanted to take the doctor with him, first of all, to show him that there was an alien ship coming to get him. And then he decides to take Scully with him to the meeting because he wants a substitute. He figures if the aliens show up, they won't take him, which he's found excruciating. They'll take Scully.
So a hostage exchange, which is interesting because on Duane Barry, the first episode, Mulder ends up exchanging himself for the hostages. And then in Ascension, Duane Barry's got this radical notion that the aliens who are in touch with him apparently are open to changing their experimental subject from Duane Barry to Dana Scully. Of course, why wouldn't they take both of them? Why is it? Anyways, I find it funny there's a symmetry of a hostage exchange, one with the FBI and then the other one with the aliens.
Well, actually, it was kind of a necessity. The Chris Carter, who wrote it, figured, oh, that's a good way to get rid of Dana because she's going to have a baby.
In real life.
Yeah, and actually in one of the scenes.
An alien baby?
It could be.
Could be.
Well, anyway, when she's on the ship, they do sort of flashes during the episode. You see her big belly. I think it's her belly, you know, because she's pregnant and they've got something fixed on her belly examining it. And. Yeah. So anyway, to make a long story short, because we've got tons of stuff to talk about today, Duane Barry kidnaps her. They don't know so Mulder gets involved. He's not supposed to be, but he stays involved anyway, and he wants to find his partner. So Duane Barry, on the way to the abduction site, which the FBI back in Washington, they don't know exactly where it is.
Even Duane Barry doesn't know where it is.
Yeah, even Duane Barry doesn't know. But
he just keeps driving, and then he gets hunches. The aliens are talking to him, he hears voices in his head, and he turns right sharply, tire squealing.
And then he gets stopped by a highway patrolman who tries to get Duane Barry to step out of the car because he notices there's blood on his sleeve or whatever on his arm. And Duane Barry doesn't want to because you're not going to stop Duane Barry, he says. I've got to be there. And so anyway, he shoots him in desperation. And the highway patrolman had turned on the dash cam. And so there's a picture of that. And then they show Mulder back in the FBI with an investigator. And they, at one point, Duane Barry opens the trunk, and they see that on the camera, and they make a corner large and large and large, and they see that Scully is still alive. So somehow Mulder figures out that they're going to the sky.
Somewhere in the Blue Ridge Mountains.
Yeah, it's a
sky star.
Star Skyway, and there's a cable car there. So they arrive, and the caretaker says... They ask him, "Have you seen this guy?" And they said, "Yes, he was here 45 minutes ago." And the cable cars are closed, so I said, "You'll have to take the long way around and drive up." And Mulder goes crazy because he wants to get up there. And so he takes the cable car. You know, he has to twist the caretaker's arm. And meanwhile, he leaves...
Threatens him with a gun, basically.
Yeah, and he leaves his partner...
Rat Boy, another famous X-Files character.
Krychek.
Rat Boy's with him in this one, is he? Okay.
Yes.
Krychek.
And by the way, I never realized that before, but Rat Boy or Krychek, before they take off on the trip, he's talking on the phone and he says, yes, okay, I'll keep you posted. And then in the parking garage, then they pan into this car where the cigarette smoking or cancer man, as Mulder used to call him, is sitting in the car smoking. So we realize that Krycek is in cahoots with the cigarette smoking man, yeah, and we don't really know who that is. And we think perhaps he's a part of a secret cartel within the government.
Is this a smoking man's first appearance?
No, he appeared in the very first episode.
Very first episode when Scully was being interviewed.
Oh, okay.
Ironically, he was only meant to be an extra, but he was so compelling. No yeah. lines of dialogue, just in the room. And the camera panned over him. He had such a face and when that yeah. that cigarette that they started to write him into the show. He became a central, one of the central figures.
Well, he's almost the iconic image of the show, isn't he?
He's Mulder's nemesis, right?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, Krycek turns off the cable car so that Mulder is held up from going to the top of the mountain. And Mulder, he does manage to climb out of the car and sort of makes his way to the top. And he catches Dwayne Barry. And Dwayne Barry, where is she? And they've taken her. And he sees this sort of bright light air vehicle, Mulder does. But the viewer isn't really sure, well, what is that? Is it a spaceship or is it kind of looks like a helicopter? And so anyway, yeah, she's gone. So Mulder takes him into custody and another helicopter lands with FBI and paramedics and everything. And Krycek is in the interview room and Mulder keeps asking what happened to her, where is she, and he wants to get the truth out of him, but Dwayne Barry isn't being that cooperative, so he starts to choke him, and then he stops himself, and he leaves the interview room, and he tells Krycek, alias Rat Boy, to make sure that no one goes into the room. And so when Mulder does come back, Skinner finally arrives.
And guess who was in the room?
Yeah, Krycek is in the room, and Mulder goes in, and Krycek's on the floor convulsing, and the paramedics are there.
Not Krycek convulsing.
Sorry, Dwayne Barry is convulsing.
What a bad death scene, too. I mean, he's really hamming it up, and all of a sudden he just dies.
He was being written out of the series, so that was his last chance to really, score a few acting points, right?
Yeah.
Actually, the character actors that they hired on The X-Files were quite excellent. They're not mainstream actors, but they're really good character actors. Like Dwayne Barry was really good in his role.
What was his name?
So this
Steve Rilesbeck.
I know him. He played Charlie Manson in Helter Skelter.
I could see that, boy. Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, he made quite a mark.
But you know what's really interesting with this episode for me, Ascension, and it's in the title, Ascension.
Her ascension, I guess.
Right? Her ascension. I mean, there's kind of a religious connotation or elevating to another plane of existence. But also, in this case, Dwayne Barry would refer to his abductions by the aliens as, I just ascend, I ascend up and up and up and up. So this is where Scully, the skeptic on the show, and I'm the skeptic on the probe, by the way, is abducted purportedly by aliens. Dwayne Barry says that I swapped out hostages. The aliens are no longer going to torture me. They're going to torture Scully. So this is a very interesting inflection point in the ongoing UFO saga that The X-Files goes through for 9 or 10 seasons, where the skeptic gets abducted. Of course, she's saying, I don't remember what happened to me.
So is that how they keep, at the end of the episode, I assume she's returned because they have to have her back at some point.
That's right. She's returned.
So she's not suddenly converted to being a true believer.
You don't know that right away because she's pregnant.
She's not returned at the end of this episode. No, she's still lost, but
I thought they found her. Or maybe
It's another episode.
So, okay.
But Skinner is really, he's on Mulder's side. Then when Krycek disappears, they tried to find him and Mulder's charging him with murder. Skinner, the assistant director, he's really mad and he reopens the
X-Files. That's right, because they were closed. That's right.
Season two
started with the X-Files have been closed down at the end of season one. And this is the episode where the X-Files get reopened, right?
Yeah. So it's kind of a pivotal episode in many respects.
Well, and it kind of, for me, it kind of emphasizes how they like to blur the line between were they aliens or was it the government trying to cover something up or trying to to take your attention. If it was alien, the government tried to take your attention away from it.
And they give that ambiguity there, because when Mulder arrives at the top of the mountain with Dwayne Barry and says, "Where's Scully?" and he says, "They took her."
Who?
And then helicopters appear. Yeah. And of course, it's nighttime and it's foggy because the sun has set. So all Mulder ever sees is military helicopters. He never sees a UFO. When he arrives, Dwayne Barry said they took her. So we get in the show the built-in ambiguity of whether it was the government or an alien force.
And this is the first time the X-Files got into the whole alien abduction theme, isn't it? Basically, I know Mulder's sister,
Samantha.
Fox. There's a background story of Mulder's that he's looking for a sister. But isn't this the first episode where they actually deal with an abductee, the trauma that the abductee experiences, and, you know, they weave it into the show's fabric, which leads us to our first musical break of the afternoon and a potentially real abduction case.
Have we finished with that?
I just wanted to make another few comments. Krycek or Rat Boy has another conversation with the cigarette smoking man, and he asks him, "What about Scully?" And the cigarette smoking man says, "We've taken care of that." So we kind of know that, well, either he's in cahoots with the aliens, or it's that secret group within the government that's taken care of her. And that I wrote, the line is always blurred between real alien activity and government interference and cooperation with the secret organization within the government.
The truth is out there. Deny everything.
And by the way, X-File fans, we've got something to look forward to. There's 10 episodes coming out. Are they in the fall, Ed? Or
fall or winter?
Fall or winter. Wow, 10 episodes.
I think it was November last time.
That's unprecedented.
I think it's going to start with Mulder looking in the mirror and realizing, oh, there's missing time. Look at all the lines on my face. Where the hell did that happen?
Yeah, like all of us. Yeah.
Well, I hope David Duchovny plays Mulder a little less like a zombie this time, which he came across with last year's remake.
Maybe he is a zombie.
Well, she was great, but it's not just the aging. I mean, everybody ages, so is she. But he was like out of it. Didn't he strike you as like, you know, hello?
that was his role, too. He was recovering from something. They spoke about it.
Real-life drug addiction. Maybe.
Spooky Mulder.
So, Spooky Mulder. Well, let's hear some Brahms to change the palette.
All right. So we will have about 5 minutes, 4.5 minutes of Brahms, and then come back and talk about, I guess you could potentially call this the granddaddy or grandmummy of all UFO abduction cases, although there were earlier ones in South America in particular. And that's the Betty and Barney Hill case from New Hampshire in 1961. So we'll play a little bit of music and we'll come back and delve right into the hills. Thank you. Okay, we are back. Mr. Sulby, that was
Brahms Intermezzo number 2 in B flat minor.
Well, before we go further, you are listening to Local 107.3 FM CFMH, broadcasting from the campus of the University of New Brunswick in St. John, New Brunswick, Canada.
Do you know what you sound like? Who you sound like?
Orson Welles, hopefully.
You sound like a character on the X-Files. I know we're going to go to... Can you just read one thing for us, Ed? And the X-Files has a character who is a classic called...
Deep Throat.
This is the Let's Set Up the Host segment.
Okay, so we're going to get Ed to straight-lace, just read in his normal DJ voice, his normal deep throat voice, and we're going to see if he actually sounds like Deep Throat from the X-Files. Go ahead.
God, this is a Watergate redux.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll read it first, and then hopefully I can play the actual audio.
Actor, okay. Right.
Your lives may be in danger. You've seen things that weren't meant to be seen.
All right, let's hear the X-Files. Deep Throat saying it.
I can provide you with information, but only so long as it's in my best interest to do so. Care and discretion are now imperative. Mr. Mulder, they've been here for a long, long time. Why are those like yourself, who believe in the existence of extraterrestrial life on this Earth, not dissuaded by all the evidence to the contrary?
That wasn't quite the same words, but...
Just repeat another one.
Mr. Mulder, they've been here for a long, long time. Why are those like yourself who believe in extraterrestrial life on Earth not dissuaded by all the evidence?
Ed, you are Deep Throat.
He sounds like him, doesn't he?
I just listened to that. I don't sound a bit like that.
You sound exactly like
him.
You
know, Mark, it's really funny. Like, you and I independently had that thought. When I first met him, I thought about that. And you...
Shared delusion.
Yeah. Same thing I kept thinking.
like Betty and Barney.
I was listening to one of your episodes of The Sky Above, Ed, and I went... It's Deep Throat. It's X-Files. We're doing an X-Files episode. We have to. I guess the listeners will be the ultimate judge.
I don't know whether he likes that nickname or not.
Ladies and gentlemen, you've just heard two of the crosses I have to bear. Aren't you glad you're not me?
Well, Ed is such a Jesus-like figure.
Well, we just did Ascension, so I guess that might be appropriate. Right?
Yeah, true.
Just don't go into a church. You don't want to see it collapse.
The lightning may strike.
All right, Ed.
Let's begin with the granddaddy.
The Betty and Barney Rubble abduction.
Yeah, right. It's tempting to say that. Probably a lot of you out there have heard of this case. They made a very good, might even be on YouTube or Netflix somewhere, television movie based on this. The Betty and Barney Hill incident, or what I think is her story or something like that. James Earl Jones played Barney Hill. Estelle Parsons, who was a pretty good, renowned stage actress, actually, who played Betty. And an actor you may or may not have heard of, but also a very good character actor, Barnard Hughes, played a character we're going to be referring to. Not a character, a real-life person, a Dr. Benjamin Simon, the psychiatrist who eventually conducted the hypnosis on both Betty and Barney Hill.
And the actors are playing, they're all playing real life characters, not just Dr. Benjamin Simon, but Benny and Barney Hill are real people too.
Well, they were. They're now deceased. Everybody's deceased.
They're a little less real now.
They were an interracial couple.
They ascended.
They ascended, and that's...
Or descended.
That's part of their background. Apparently, it was, by all accounts, a very happy marriage, but of course, they probably would have faced outside prejudice in 1961 America, before the Civil Rights Movement really took.
And they were married before 61, but 61 is the date of
our big event.
They each had been married before.
Yes, yeah, and he had children from before, too.
That's right.
Yeah. Okay, so this couple is driving through the New Hampshire White Mountains in, I think, September 1961.
On their way back from Canada.
Was it Canada?
Okay. Niagara Falls. Right. A little vacation in Niagara Falls.
And Montreal.
And they see a light off to the side. There was a 3/4 gibbous moon that night, and apparently Jupiter was about 3 degrees away from the moon.
Was it an Irving service station?
No, don't think so. Well, if it were closer to New Brunswick, it probably could have been. So they see this light, apparently, and this part, there's two stages to this incident. The first stage, the observation of a craft of some sort. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean extraterrestrial craft. It could be advanced human technological craft. Don't know, but that
could
part...
Could be Kraft macaroni. No, actually, yeah. we ruled that one out.
Yeah, we ruled that one out. Crosses to bear. I feel like a ringmaster in the zoo, frankly. So this thing started following them, and that's not in dispute. Even some of the skeptics of the incident agree to that. The second stage is what happened when they were supposedly ordered to stop and taken supposedly on board. And therein hangs the tale. Anybody want to pick it up from there?
There was a report written by Walter Webb. He was a member of NICAP.
NICAP, which is?
Which is kind of a precursor to MUFON, though I think they existed alongside each other for a long time. That's the National Investigative Committee for Aerial Phenomena, NICAP. And he had been in the military. I forget if he'd been a major or something in the Navy. And he went and interviewed the Hills and took the details of their report. Broke it down into two reports, Incident 1 and Incident 2.
Right.
Incident 1 was the thing that they could remember, the sighting. That is, they were driving through this kind of rural area, 30 miles per hour in the White Mountains in New Hampshire, September 1961. Saw a light, thought they were observing something like a satellite or a plane. And it got closer and wouldn't go away. It was moving.
It was kind of like a falling star, except it fell up.
Right. Yeah, that's right. And
which meteors do not do.
And they eventually pulled over the side of the road and Barney grabbed binoculars, or I guess Betty grabbed him first and then Barney, and they were both having a look at it and arguing about what it was they were seeing. But eventually Barney started to get freaked out about this. In fact, we got a clip of Barney getting freaked out. We'll play it a little later in the show.
Well, that clip of the freaked out is... I think it's his
incident
hypnosis,
two,
his
under hypnosis.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, the actual abduction thing.
Yeah.
But under hypnosis, he's reliving incident one as well, which he can remember without hypnosis.
Yeah.
What's kind of funny, like I didn't really understand, kind of like, remember Travis Walton got out of the car and walked towards the craft?
What is it with these people?
And Barney did the same thing.
Barney did the same thing with his binos, but Barney thought that he was getting telepathic messages from someone looking out of
the
craft.
Well, he thought he had, when he looked through binoculars, he was seeing what he described as a pancake craft with windows that were curved, and that he actually could see people in there, and that there was a quote-unquote leader that they assigned the status of leader to one of them who was telepathically commanding them, pull a car over.
Power of suggestion.
You know, made him do 10 jumping jacks and so forth.
That sounds a little bit Freudian, Ed.
Yeah.
Bobby's had lots of experience with Freudians.
I've read about it.
So anyway, Barney said that I saw people, they had uniforms on, they were kind of like humans. They had caps as well. Well, he might have been describing Lufthansa airline employees for...
That's right. He said their behavior reminded him of German officers.
Cold German efficiency. Yeah. Yes, he did say that.
Now, the main thing, though, is that...
And it freaked him out. They started to drive away after that. Betty was saying, "You fool, you damn fool, get in the car," and they drove away.
And then there's the usual, same as with the Allagash, not so much with the Walton case. There is missing time in the Walton case when they were on the lake and they came ashore and the fire had burned down.
That's the Allagash case, yeah.
Yeah, that's the Allagash, the Allagash case. Don't think there is much.
There's no missing time in the Walton
case. No, you're right. Okay. But there is here. And... apparently.
The next thing they remember pulling up their driveway or something like that.
No, but none of it, he was upset and scared, but none of it was overly traumatic for either of them until about a day and a half later, she starts having dreams. And Betty Hill, and she has these recurring, she thinks nightmares, but they're the same dream each night for six consecutive nights. Barney doesn't have this, but over a period, and there's a 2.5 year gap between the onset of her dreams and when the symptoms for both of them, but particularly Barney, who had an alcohol problem, had apparently kicked the habit, but had, because of this trauma or whatever was he experienced, started drinking again.
Well, all I remembered, though, was a sighting at that point.
Yeah, but he wasn't traumatized until apparently he heard her dream stories. And that's and I'm going to post on my Twitter site, twitter.com/EdwardO'Reilly1, a link to this NICAP report, because it's way, way, way too long to get into all the details here. I mean, it took me 3 hours to go through the darn thing. There's reams and reams of material.
So the account again, so our listeners can get it, Edward O'Reilly,
twitter.com/EdwardO'Reilly, O-R-E-I-L-L-Y-1. And I'll post the link on my Twitter account. If you're interested, go there, and you could read the thing for yourself. It's a, what do you call it, PDF format?
Yeah.
It's quite long.
Well, it's quite long. It's the actual typewritten documents that have been scanned. But it's a quick act. I found it a quick read. The principal Barney and Betty Hill story is a fairly quick read. But then there's a whole bunch of other material at the end of it.
I thought it was very informative, especially he looked at the incident from several different aspects.
Yes, I thought it was a good
report. From the military, from the medical, and I thought it was great.
Now, this is interesting. Go to, if you don't want to read the whole thing, starting on page 14
Just listen
or 15,
to the probe.
Yeah, just listen to the probe. We'll summarize it for you. He summarizes his conclusions. He summarizes the psychiatrist who actually conducted 2.5 years later in 1964. This happened in 1961. Dr. Benjamin Simon and the Air Force conclusions. And
what does Dr. Benjamin Simon say?
Well, maybe you give that, and you give that conclusion. Why don't you?
I actually don't remember though.
Instead of giving the conclusions, why don't we talk a little bit more about what happened?
Because it's all tied in with what do they think happened?
Let's sum up incident one. Is they saw a UFO, it frightened them. It was dark, it was night. They were rural. They pulled over. They looked in binoculars. It started to freak them out. They started to realize it's not a falling star, not falling up star. It's not a satellite. And geez, it doesn't look like a plane either. It's silent. And they got in their car and drove away. And then it seemed like it was following them. So they kind of had a freakish incident. But nothing really bad happens in that whole part of the story. The interesting part becomes what they call incident two, or Walter Webb in his report refers to as incident two, which is the
abduction.
Which
came out under hypnosis.
Right. So that was over 2 years later with Dr. Benjamin Simon. And those tapes are actually available online as well. Now, we've heard them.
I should mention, though, that the detailed abduction of both of them came out under hypnotherapy, but she started remembering some of the abduction in her dreams.
Well, yeah,
some of it.
But see, here's my problem with that. I know what you're saying, but she called them dreams. It's referred to by Walter Webb as dreams. I think that's exactly what they are. I don't think you say that they're dreams and, hey, guess what? They're actually real. I mean, it's either it's real memory or it's just the dream.
Well, sometimes dreams are buried subconscious episodes are starting to surface. Sometimes dreams are a reflection of something that's really happened.
Dr. Selby, MD, is that true? Is that what dreams can be?
I guess because she wrote them down. She was very meticulous.
Yeah. She did. I forgot that.
She wrote them down, so then, therefore, they did become reality. But it's kind of rare that we actually have very realistic dreams. When I have them, I love them. You know, because they're not these fantasy ones.
Oh, yeah, they are. We know they are.
That's another show.
But so I guess one thing
the
that
I've been
wanting to say is, how come we haven't, did they realize that they got home a couple of hours later than they should have?
They had missing time that they couldn't account for. And
is this before she dreamed?
There was one interesting thing the following day, and this was after the incident occurred. She and several family members went out to the car, and on the hood of the car, there were these spots. And these spots were somehow magnetized because they passed a compass over it, and the compass started spinning when it got near the spots. Now, the spots lasted for several months afterwards. No one knows how the spots got there and what put them there. So this is kind of like one of the few physical items of proof, perhaps, that something strange happened.
And their watches, both of their watches never worked again.
Yeah. So anyway, yes, I think we're going to have some disagreement as to go to page 15 of this report. We don't want to read the whole thing and read the separate conclusions, because one of the problems with the psychiatrist's conclusion was that Mr. Webb, who was formerly in the Air Force, left some material for the psychiatrist to bone up, if you will, on the whole UFO phenomenon. He refused to do so. He wouldn't look at anything regarding the UFO phenomenon whatsoever. And you could read the investigator's summary, the irritation with that, because he actually says, I think he would have come to a different conclusion had he bothered to actually do some research on UFOs, which he wouldn't do.
Forget the investigator's irritation. Let's just listen to your irritation that he wouldn't consider any UFO material.
You can't comment or have a workable thesis of anything if you're not going to at least know something about the subject that you're theorizing on.
Well, tell me, what's wrong with Sigmund Freud?
Yeah.
Oh, we'll ask Archie Bunker that, which we're not going to repeat here because we like to do another episode.
But didn't you tell us before the air that Freud's been discredited? That is, I don't know, but you used a fancy Latin word or Greek word.
Well, he's not the one to talk because what's his nickname for today's show?
Deep throat.
Deep throat. Yes, and who came up with that appellation? These two.
The Appalachians are a mountain range.
Go to Ed's Twitter account and vote. Just say, yes, we think he sounds exactly like Deep Throat.
Well, for one thing, I think that guy's voice is a lot deeper, but that's a different question. But I would actually, I wouldn't mind that because that's a pretty successful character actor.
You kind of look like him, too.
Well, I think I look more like Orson Welles, but
yeah. Well, let's talk about this.
The conclusion.
The conclusion. But let's just say we can talk about the details of the abduction. Let's go through what came out.
That's the juicy stuff.
It's the juicy stuff. Yeah.
All right.
Really juicy.
Which has come out in a lot of that came out after hypnosis. And another thing, apparently, according to the investigator, a lot of the missing detail from her dream was filled in his words, quite nicely after hypnosis. The first part of the encounter, the so-called abduction, and then the aftermath smoothly connect to each other once the hypnosis was done.
Okay, well, let's talk about the juicy stuff, though. Let's get to the...
These guys want to just get to the probing all this kind of...
We do. Well, there is a probe.
That's the name of our show.
Right.
Yeah, right.
And guess what? It comes up here. We had an implant in the X-Files episode.
Not all that comes up here.
So we had an implant, we've got missing time, and now we've got a probe. We got the three essential elements of abduction theory all in one episode.
Yep, that's right.
And you guys are just anxious to talk about this probe.
Well, because the audience is saying, stop dragging us out. Stop leading us on. Get to the good stuff. So we're going to get to the good stuff.
Okay, Mark, you do Barney's version.
He closed his eyes the whole time and stuck his fingers in his ear and said, nah, 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 this is not happening. Apparently, though, mind control turned off on a side road. There's a craft. They see the craft as a ramp or a ladder, which is very, think 1961 American culture, pre-Star Trek. So it's got a ramp and American ladder. Yeah. They weren't beamed up anywhere. Oh. The aliens came over and he referred to them as men. They weren't so dissimilar as to...
Humanoid.
They were humanoid, but they do refer them to as men.
Which most of the aliens in Star Trek were anyway.
And they had to lift, they just told him to stay asleep and they took the gun that he'd had out because he was freaked out, placed it on the seat of the car, and lifted him up by his arms and drug him gently along and up into the craft, into a wedge-shaped room because it was a circular craft, which Barney describes as pancake, and did an examination. Now, the examination, the good stuff is that they put his pants down. They didn't take him off entirely because I guess there's some modicum of modesty amongst this alien group. And then they put a suction cup over his genitals, to which they speculate that a sperm sample was taken. And then they inserted the probe in the other orifice and took a sample. A sample of what they would take from the anal orifice, I would have no idea, but this is his story.
Use your imagination.
Such delicacy.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. Exactly. This is one of the things that makes the story a little hard for me to think of.
Someone's anally fixated here. I won't say who.
Yeah. So Barney got probed. Maybe that's why he was traumatized. Though I think if you go to the doctor's office and get a prostate exam, I don't have nightmares from that. I don't consider it pleasant, but
And now years... How long ago, how many years was it before, when he first got home, he had
this... 2.5 years between the time of the incident and when they went for psychiatric.
No, but I mean, when did he start to get growths in his genital
that
area.
That was during the
he got warned. Oh, did he?
All of the trauma. And this is one the reason why she as well, but
he ended up with growths around his genital area. But when did that happen?
That was during the 2.5 years between the incident and the psychoanalysis.
No, right. That could be attributed to that cup-like thing that they put over.
Or it could be attributed to things that Barney was doing that Betty wouldn't approve of either.
No, that was proven that it wasn't venereal disease.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah.
And so that the reason they went for the psychoanalysis is because of particularly him drinking again, severe emotional problems, ulcers, and that physical rash that he started developing, which may or may not have been psychosomatic. Now,
that's Bernie, but Betty's story is more interesting because I don't consider it to be the same thing.
Well, Betty's is more detailed.
Yeah. Do you want to jump in on Betty's, Robert?
No, we'll let Ed do that.
Yeah, go ahead, Ed.
Well,
describe what Betty's abduction
I'll
happened.
Be the voyageur.
Betty gives a little more. Well, they both give details about what was supposedly done to them during the incident. She talks about skin samples, hair samples, disrobing, having a probe inserted. Oh, there's the word. Into her navel, which she was told by the lead scientist that it was a pregnancy test.
It was very painful.
Well here, let me actually read Walter Webb's reports. Just a very few short paragraphs. Mrs. Hill was left with a doctor or examiner. That's what they were referring to the aliens of particular. And the man who spoke to her on the way to the ship. As she looked around the room, she noticed an examining table, a stool, a cabinet, equipment in one corner, and a bright bluish overhead light. And I'll get back to those items in a minute. The doctor sat her on the stool. He brought over an instrument like a big microscope and held it close to her left arm. He seemed to be inspecting the skin under close magnification. He then took long instrument-like letter opener and scraped skin cells from the arm. The samples were given to the leader, who placed them in a plastio-like material and wrapped them up. The doctor looked at her eyes with the light, opened her mouth and looked at her throat and teeth, and swabbed her left ear, removing scrapings and wrapping it up as before. He pulled out and cut some strands of hair from her head. Now, to me, when I read that, all I can think of is 1961 doctor's office in America. You're going to sit on a stool. There are going to be cabinets. I mean, aliens that bring cabinets, and they got medical. I mean, she's describing a 1961 American doctor's office and a 1961 American doctor's procedures. Open your mouth, say, here's your swab.
Well, this gets into a separate topic, but that's not all that hard to explain. People throughout the ages, and there have been even earlier UFO reports, although we're going back well into the 19th century and even earlier. But they used to talk about in the 19th century airships, not craft at all, but airships, because this was before the airplane, but there were balloons, there were dirigibles, things like that. People have always explained phenomena according to the times that they live in. They're basic reference points, which change with passage of time. You're not going to get someone from 1875 talk about a starship, because they have no conception of such a thing. They have to try to describe what they see in terms that they live with and in terms that they understand. And those evolve with time. So you're going to get a 19th century report and a 20th century report. They're going to be inherently different because of the point of reference changes.
That kind of delegitimizes then her report.
That's what I think, Barbara.
If it's too much like a suburban doctor's office.
Well, how she's going to describe it.
Well, why doesn't? Do you think that the alien spaceship would have an examining room similar to a doctor's office in North America?
I think they could have made it look similar. Because they seem to be taking pains not to traumatize her. Remember in her account, she says multiple times that they went, excuse the expression, bent over backwards to not send her off the deep end. And when they inserted the probe into her navel and she felt pain, They were surprised by that and taken aback. So they seemed to accommodate the people that they were sent.
I see. So they, through telepathy, which Barney talks about.
Well, even Star Trek, you have holodecks.
I mean, Betty says that they actually didn't, it wasn't telepathy. She said, and she's very adamant about this, they spoke to me. It was English. We had a nice conversation. She said, when they tried to get me onto the ship, I was completely awake and I didn't want to go on. And I socked him in the stomach.
Which she didn't say under hypnosis, though. So her story has changed a little bit.
Well, that doesn't help in credibility. No. But anyway, she was talking to the leader, and they describe him too. Let's describe him, because the UFO mythology now has aliens coming from Zeta Reticuli, which stems from the Betty and Barney Hill abduction story. And they described the aliens that they saw as very human-like, but they had larger eyes. They had a little smaller nose, but they had a mouth, a face otherwise very human. Their ears had no protruding part.
They're like the grays, right?
No, they're not. They were thick in the chest. I never heard gray thick in the chest. They were the same height, more or less, as Betty. Yeah. I don't hear grays described that way. Their long, spindly arms. Their arms and their proportions were human-like, just not as tall as Barney, but more like Betty's height.
More like the beiges than the
grays. Right. They sound, and they wore uniforms, and they had hats, and they, they really do sound like airline employees in a lot of ways. You don't hear grays described as wearing any clothing at all. No. They don't have almost no nose, and they look the great big bright slanted black eyes and so forth. They're very alien. Where these were described not as the prototypical grays that Robert has on his cap that I admire so much, but as a really very different description.
Which does vary, though. If you look at different UFO reports over the decades, it's not always grays.
What kind of alien is the alien in the alien autopsy that you can see?
Well, that's been kind of discredited, I think. That's a different topic, but that's a gray, isn't it?
That's a gray.
I believe so, yeah.
And that sort of explains why they do these probes in the orifices that they don't seem to have if they're a gray. For instance, that gray.
Well, they didn't even know supposedly what colors were. What was that?
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Well, there was color yellow. They spoke English, but she said they spoke.
Her favorite vegetable was squash,
and yellow. What is yellow?
But you know what that reminds? Well, exactly. It's like if you've mastered basic English, and you don't know what yellow is. It sounds like the dialogue from one of my favorite sci-fi movies, The Starman, where the alien speaks halting English, doesn't have a complete mastery of it.
Which came decades after this incident.
It did come decades after, yes.
They weren't really as educated as the planet that Klaatu came from.
Not at all.
Because Klaatu knew everything, and he even spoke with a British accent.
We're starting, clock is ticking, but okay. I want to get to one thing, and that is some of the conclusion. Go to page 15 onwards, because twitter.com/EdwardO'Reilly1. I'll post the link.
Okay, what are the conclusions? Can you summarize them for us?
Conclusion by the Air Force, there's a conclusion by these Dr. Simon, the psychiatrist, and the conclusion by the investigator. Dr. Simon concluded that they all agree that they saw something in the sky. Dr. Simon thinks it was a dream solely, and that she somehow traumatized her husband with this dream. And that the whole basis of both their trauma, including Barney's, was her dreaming, which she started just a day or so after the incident. The investigator has, and I frankly have a problem with this, because if you believe that thesis, then you have to assume that simply, we got about 5 minutes, we have to assume that Barney's trauma, his renewed drinking, his renewed alcoholism, his ulcers, his severe emotional trouble, and whatever was starting to grow around his genitalia, assuming that was psychosomatic, which can be a product of stress. According to the psychiatrist,
you don't like the psychiatrist's conclusion. What are the alternative conclusions?
I'll get to that. According to the psychiatrist, all of Barney's trauma was solely due to Betty's, because his trauma started before they went into hypnotherapy. That's why they went to hypnotherapy. All of his trauma was instigated by listening to her tales of her dreams of abduction. And I'm sorry, that's bunk. no one is going to be set off the deep end, and I'll play just maybe 30 seconds of what I mean by the deep end.
We're gonna have to delete the word bunk. That's just bunk, too.
Yeah, too. No one is going to be set off the deep end by simply hearing a story of someone's supposed abduction.
Okay, so you're skeptical of the skeptic?
And so is the investigator. The dream theory doesn't work for
me. Okay, so what are the other conclusions? What does Walter Webb say?
He doesn't know.
He doesn't know. And what does the
Air Force, usual double talk, you know, the same kind of crap you hear from Roswell, weather balloons, swamp gas.
What's the conclusion from Deep Throat?
My conclusion, I'm. If you want my opinion, it's just an opinion, no better, no worse than anyone else's. I think if you look at the investigator's conclusion, I think it's a very well-balanced report, well-researched, well-documented, and he comes up with a big question mark, and I think that's where I am. But I agree with him, I don't think the psychiatrist, particularly when he wouldn't look at any UFO literature at all, has the answer whatsoever, and these guys are freaking out again. Speaking of freaking out, here is Mr. Barney Hill's freaking out.
Yeah, let's hear that. Do we have time?
Yeah, great. We have time.
This is Barney under hypnotic regression. Let's hear his own words.
If I could find that.
And I can see it tilted toward me.
Tilted? What does it look like now when you say tilted? Did you see
it? Looks like a big pancake with windows and rows of windows and lights of not light, just one huge light.
And rows of windows like a commercial plane?
Rows of windows. They're not like a commercial plane because they curve around to the size of this pancake, and I got to get my gun.
Oh, I got my gun! All right. All right, that's all.
Stop. I got to get my gun!
Go to sleep, Steve. You got to get now.
Okay, now that we're supposed to think that that kind of trauma originated from simply listening to his wife's recollection of her dream, no way in hell. Anyway, we're just about out of time. Nice to be the moderator so I can cut these guys off when they start irritating me. Go to twitter.com/EdwardO'Reilly1. Read the report, because we've just barely scratched the surface. It's fascinating. It's an extremely well-written report, well-documented. Draw your own conclusions, because the truth is out there.
And watch out for the probe.
Watch out for the probe. Okay. So we're going to play us out with some music. Watch out for the probe.